Hello and welcome to RN Afternoons. Alice Keith here, and it's great to have your company. So if I asked you right now how you'd spend your money if you won the lottery, would you be able to give me an answer straight away? If you've already wistfully spent your winnings, well, you're not the only one. We've all daydreamed about it at some point, and later in the show we'll be chatting about the realities of these big wins. Can it really make you happy? Plus, comedy in the kitchen and the classroom, the story of a chocolate bar and history for laughs. We also take a ride down a solar bike lane in Amsterdam and meet a couple of Jillaroos. That and lots of great music between now and 3 o'clock here on RN Afternoons. Stay with us. But first, the world of virtual reality still seems futuristic. The idea that putting a computer on your head and experiencing a totally different world is pretty hard to grasp. In Australia, it can seem like the world of VR belongs to another place and another time. But a Melbourne couple is actually leading the way when it comes to using VR for non-fiction storytelling. Oscar Ravy and Katie Morrison are virtual reality designers, and through their company Vertov, they blur the lines between documentary film, gaming and reality. They've recently come back from the Sheffield Docfest in the UK, where they won the top prize for interactive storytelling, and they join me in the studio now. Oscar and Katie, hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Can we start with, I guess, the obvious question, what is virtual reality and how does it work?
Virtual reality is audiovisual technology that allows you to, as a user, strap a screen to your face. But that screen becomes part of your field of view. So whatever you see in the screen responds to where you're actually looking at, where your body is looking at. It makes you feel like you're in space. That could be a realistic space or could be a completely abstract space.
It's pretty amazing. I tried it recently and I was so amazed by how real it felt and how immersive this technology is. What are some of the devices? Can you explain more about the actual devices that you use to experience it?
Mm-hmm. Virtual reality, the current state of the art, relies on mobile platforms, the same components that are part of your tablets and your smartphones are the ones used in the headsets, in the virtual reality headsets. So you can use mobile phones, or you can use fully fledged, fully produced virtual reality headsets. And you might be hearing, and you will be hearing about the likes of HTC, big brands like HTC, Sony, and Oculus, producing and launching their commercial versions of the virtual reality headsets before the end of the year.
Can you talk about how the interactive the space is and how immersive it is when you've got the headset on?
I think what the interesting thing about virtual reality does is that it responds to your body movements. So it gives you a sense of, we talk about presence in VR, really kind of feeling like you're there. So, you know, because it's responding to where you're looking, it's tracking where your head is. You know, if you look up, you might see the virtual sky. If you look down, you're going to see your virtual feet if you have them, or maybe you have paws or whatever you have. So it does give you this real kind of, because it's acting the way that your body acts normally, it just gives you this presence of actually being in a real space, even though it might not look that realistic.
And how long has it been around?
Well, the story of virtual reality dates back to the 60s. Lots of experimentation in terms of what you could do interfacing your body with machines that had audiovisual output. The current state, in terms of the theory, in terms of the history around it, was big during the 90s. You remember Lawnmower Man and the Matrix. They gave great visibility to the concepts of virtual reality, but we were still far from the actual devices at a consumer level. But what's happening today is that thanks to the mobile platforms and the components that are part of that industry, we have access to that at a more affordable level.
And what are some of the applications for VR in terms of what it, gaming is an obvious one, but it goes much broader than that.
Well, a lot of people are talking about really interesting applications in things like health, in workplace training, those sorts of things. Any time when you think that it might be useful to put your viewer into a different situation is
like
an application.
Learning keyhole surgery or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or interesting things like allowing doctors to swap roles with patients. You know, what, giving people that sense of being another person.
Do you think this kind of technology can help? This is an interesting example, swapping places with someone, build empathy in terms of, you know, experiencing things that you couldn't really imagine.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really important application. That's actually kind of where we come from in terms of our practice. So my background is in documentary filmmaking, and so we've always been interested in this world of how do you convey another person's reality to your viewers, you know, their life. And I think what virtual reality gives you is an opportunity to allow people to step into another world in a sense. And I think that can, I mean, it doesn't mean that automatically empathy is going to kind of be there and be present for the viewer, but it gives you an opportunity to kind of play with those things of what would you feel like if you were in that situation.
A good example of that is your project, Oscar, Ascent. Can you talk about that work?
Sure. We got into virtual reality in the process of making Ascent. Ascent is a very personal, intimate, autobiographical documentary made about my father. And my father was an army officer and part of the military dictatorship in Chile, where I grew up. In 1973, he witnessed the mass execution of 15 prisoners. They got shot dead right in front of him, and there was nothing he could do. And that event marked his life. When I was 16 years old, he told me the story of that day, and that started a conversation that's been going for over 20 years. So Ascent is my interpretation of that conversation.
What made you want to tell that story in this way?
I needed probably to share the hesitation of dealing with my father as someone that I know very well, but also the images and the personas, the personalities, the signs and symbols that I was getting from media. You know, people in uniform doing things that I didn't expect my dad to do.
And so how is the story told using VR? How is the story controlled?
Mm-hmm. In Ascent, I present you with the scene of this execution and allow you to be, or invite you to be, my father. And as you are in the space, you can drive the experience forward by your gaze, by staring at certain places and certain hotspots. You move the story forward, and you also traverse the space towards the scene. Yeah.
And is the end of the story always the same, or are there kind of a few different ways that you can navigate the narrative?
It's constructed like a Greek tragedy, so it always ends the same way, but you can have different views of it.
How did your dad respond? Has he been part of the story?
Yeah. Well, he was part of the construction, definitely. He was very committed to it in a very stoic manner. As in, it had to be done. It wasn't a comfortable thing to go through. But thanks to our distance, you know, I live in Australia now, he still lives in Chile. We were able to have that critical distance to, you know, to address it instead of being affected by it.
Mm.
So, yeah, when I showed it to him, he was the same, stoic as usual. And he told me that he was thankful that I was able to give him a different perspective.
It seems like a lot of your works focus around politics and I guess, yeah, looking at different perspectives. Can you talk about Ola World, which you presented at the Sheffield Documentary Festival recently in the UK?
Yeah, Ola World was a project that came from a completely different point of view to Ascent. That was a project that was actually commissioned by the festival. And what we were trying to do there was to present a piece that started to have a look at what it's like to have a body in VR. A lot of these experiences that you get at the moment, you're kind of like a floating head or a floating set of eyeballs. You don't actually have a physical presence in the space. So we we decided to create an experimental work that that gave people hands. So we used another piece of tech called Elite Motion, and we put that into the experience, and it gave people an opportunity to use their own bodies to interact with our story that we were presenting them. And it was a really interesting exploration for us, because everyone really got into it, that you kind of expect virtual reality to be this technology which inhibits people and makes them kind of, you know, there's a lot of conversation about, oh, I'm going to look so stupid wearing this black box on my face. But we discovered that, you know, if you give people something to do and something to kind of engage with, everyone just had a really great time.
And a beautiful irony of virtual reality is that you have to actually put away your phone or any other distractions in order to access it, so you're completely present in whatever world you're inhabiting.
Exactly. And that's one of the beautiful things about it. You can't be, you know, double, triple screening with your TV and your phone and your tablet. You actually just have to pay attention to the story that's unfolding.
It's a funny thing that the what we've been using, what we've been calling the second screen, to film, to telly, to regular kind of mainstream media these days, that second screen becomes the one and only screen in front of your face for as long as you stay in there. Like in the case of Ascent, it's 10 minutes. In the case of All the World, it's 3.5 minutes. And that is the only screen that you're exposed to.
Yeah. And staying in Sheffield, you took home the top prize for the development of interactive storying, the ARTI International Prize for a pitch for an Islands project. Can you talk briefly about what that project is going to involve?
Yeah, so Islands is a really exciting project for us. It's a virtual reality series that we are developing, and it is about the idea of what is it like to be isolated in the 21st century? What does that question even mean today, now that we all have devices that connect us across the globe? And so we're looking at trying to answer that in VR by going out to people who are either in remote communities, or maybe they're just within a big city and they're remote in some other way. They might be in a jail, or they might be in their bedroom, and recording with them the stories of how they connect with the world and what their space is like. Because the other thing about virtual reality that we're trying to address with that project is that it is sometimes spoken about as a potentially isolating technology, which I don't actually think is necessarily the case. I think for all the reasons that we've talked about, you know, the ability to communicate and to create empathy, it can be a really connective experience with other people.
Alice Keith with you here on RN Afternoons. I'm speaking with Oscar Ravy and Katie Morrison, virtual reality designers. Their company is called Vertov. What's next for virtual reality? Do you expect a big boost in take-up when the Oculus Rift is released commercially next year?
Absolutely. It's going to be a massive explosion. And with it, you're going to get lots of distribution. We're going to be able to take our content, and every other VR maker will be able to distribute their content much more easily than what we've been doing in the festival circuit.
Yeah, because at the moment your works are mainly showing in art galleries or at festivals. How are regular people going to be able to access this technology in the future, or I guess in the very near future?
Mm-hmm. The industry expects that the penetration is going to be similar to that of mobile platforms and devices. But that still will take, you know, up to 3 years to reach a critical mass in terms of, you know, devices in houses.
That's pretty amazing to think, really, given where it's at now. So within a decade, it'll be pretty common.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So, and who's in the market currently for VR? Is it the sort of thing that mainly gamers are going to take up to begin with, or other people as well?
Yes, gamers. But let's open up that box, that gamers, if you see the statistical, you know, the demographics, you see that is 50-50 female and male in 30 to 35. That's the center of that demographic. So it's not unlike the same people that watch television and same people that have, you know, computers and the apps. So gamers, yes, that will be the first wave. But in that wave, there are many people that sit amongst us.
And a final question, what's next for your company, Vertov?
So we are moving into production on islands, and we'll be showing some new development on that at the International Documentary Festival in Amsterdam later in the year. So that's very exciting, and we've also got another upcoming project that we're developing with an Oscar-winning director over in the US, which is also very exciting for us.
Mm-hmm. Oscar Raby and Katie Morris and the team behind Vertov, thank you so much for chatting with me.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you for having us.